This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, thank you for staying tuned. I'm Xiaoning, and this is The Morning Run with Philip C. It has just gone past 7:18 in the morning. It's Thursday, the 18th of February. And in about half an hour, we'll be talking about youth and gangsterism. But in the meantime, let's talk about national unity. Because on Monday, the Prime Minister, Tan Sri Muhyiddin Yassin, launched the National Unity Policy and National Unity Blueprint 2021-2023, outlining these three objectives. So they are, number one, national integration built on values enshrined in the Federal Constitution and Rukun Negara. Two, forming a national identity shaped by patriotism. And three, creating society that value and practice unity.
Yep, so the PM said that more work has to be done to achieve true national integration and added that the policy success hinges on the willingness to participate across all society levels, including private sector and NGOs. But really, how different will this national unity policy be from previous unity agendas championed by different administrations over the past decades?
So joining us this morning to discuss this is Edin Koo, founder of Pusaka. Edin, thanks for speaking to us. You know, I actually last spoke to you and Dato' Dr. Shad Salim Farooqi on this very topic during the Merdeka last year on a breakfast grill. 6 months on, we have our Prime Minister announcing a national unity policy blueprint. Are we getting any closer to national integration, though?
When you're talking about things like national unity, and remember, I hope there's no confusion within the powers that be between things like integration and unity, yeah? Integration is a very, very different phantom altogether. National unity acknowledges differences. Integration requires that everybody fall into place into one single rubric. So I think these differences need to be clarified. But I think the first question that needs to be addressed is there serious political will? The national unity issue has been with us, and we've been grappling with it since 1969. In fact, the first Department of National Unity was set up following the events of 1969. And perhaps what we have in the new National Unity Blueprint, which I very much welcome, of course, is a reiteration of many things that have been established already. So I think the main stumbling block is really to have very clear strategies, to have very clear engagement, and to really have the political will. And I think the first people need to be beaten into getting a sense of working towards and aspiring towards achieving these objectives are the politicians themselves.
Yeah, Edin, so nothing is shared yet about how these three objectives will be carried out. What do you think is the best way for the government to effectively see the policy through?
Some of the aspirations and the strategies are highly idealistic, you know. For example, an understanding and appreciation of the Federal Constitution and Rukun Negara, understanding of religion, culture, and customs of various ethnicities. Now, we cannot do this in the mode of a guided democracy. We have to do this by being very, very open to help us basically transcend a lot of the fantasies that we have about each other as communities, yeah? This government, like all governments who plan to work on very aspirational ideas like this for a nation, is that it has to be extremely consultative. It cannot operate as a national unity by way of dicta. That's not going to work. That approach has destroyed all other efforts that we've made, including the Rukun Negara. And essentially, the entire Rukun Negara has not been about interrogating its principles, you know, creating an educative climate for us to essentially quarrel about its principles. But it's become a process by which people study things by rote. They recite the principles, but they don't understand what the aspirations were. The aspirations are not made known to the public for us to debate and dialogue. So if it's going to be done in this way, where we are all guided like good cadres, to put out our hands and recite a couple of principles, it's just going to be the same old refrain of great ideals who have never been given the true spirit to be explored and experienced.
So what role should the government play in all of this then?
I think the government has to play the role of a facilitator. That's their primary role, rather than a kind of imposing force. I think all these things have to be worked out. But first of all, we have to have that sense from the administration that it is willing to be administrative. And what it is going to be is that its primary role is facilitation. So let us open up as many avenues as we possibly can to have serious, and sometimes these debates are going to be fractious, yeah? But I think a degree of fractiousness is perfectly fine in a mature society, because if you don't have fractious debate, then you're going to have a lot of suspicion. You're going to have, as I said again, this fantasizing of what each of the other communities is thinking, and we're never going to get off the ground. This, as I said, is not a process of guided democracy. This is really a process of open democracy, in which the administration plays the role as the principal facilitator and not as a kind of guide or rule maker in this space.
Yeah, so the policy's second objective, which is about forming a national identity shaped by patriotism, and that's tied with the return of national service program, which the government announced last year. Do you think the NS program ought to continue? Because studies have shown that actually this program is pretty effective, with 80% of youths agreeing it does instill patriotism.
I am very suspicious of the word patriotism. It is, as Dr. Johnson said, the last refuge of the scoundrel. And I think that patriotism cannot be imposed. I've always alluded to the finest expression of patriotism for our country is encapsulated in the national anthem, Tanah Tumpahnya Darahku, one of the most beautiful lines in any national anthem, I think. But I think the national service program really did create quite a bit of room for youth to know each other and understand each other. Remember, our national service program is not militaristic necessarily. Yeah? It is really about bringing people together. And the successes, I think, were quite well known. But I think there are more profound ways that are already kind of outlined and delineated in the strategies for this NUP. I think they need to be given a lot of weight. I think issues of religion, issues of understanding religious beliefs among people, cultural beliefs among people, and even a sense of history, not just between the communities that exist in Malaysia, but within the communities that exist in Malaysia too. Our diversity runs very deep. Yeah, it's not just about Malay, Chinese, and Indians. It's about understanding the complexities of all these communities, even within themselves. So it really is a very ambitious, ambitious program. I hope we can give it the seriousness it's due. And as I said, the first step that needs to be taken is that this administration needs to be consultative.
And are there countries that we perhaps can that have successfully implemented a national unity policy that we can learn from?
No, I think the Prime Minister made a very eloquent and very lyrical description of what this entire process is going to be. He described it as a journey, not a destination. So I fall back really on this whole idea of the nation state being what the great political scientist Ben Anderson referred to as imagined communities. Yeah, I don't think also that, the Pancasila, has worked pretty well in Indonesia, but the Pancasila has been discussed in the most deep and most profound ways over the decades. You know, when we talk about things like national unity, these are not just principles that people are supposed to be taught and encapsulated in school textbooks. These are philosophies that need to be debated, right? And they are elements of the sublime of a nation state in which it's important for the very citizenry to participate, to shape, and to debate about the nation that they want to live in, the kind of people they want to be, and the future they want to have.
Thank you for your time. That was Edin Khoo, founder of Pusaka, giving us his views on the recent National Unity Blueprint. He highlights some very interesting points, one of which is that there has to have, of course, serious political will. It's not something that can be done overnight. And it's a very ambitious plan, but requires a lot of consultation with all the stakeholders.
That's right.
And whether we are mature enough, actually, as a society, to be discussing this in an open manner.
In the end, because we were talking about this before, and we always think, okay, we must have a very clear, tangible targets, but perhaps that's not the point. The point is about being a facilitator, driving consultation, encouraging unity and not integration, which is a point he clearly said, trying not to force fit solutions and problems now, but just allowing it to kind of
be a bit more
germinate
organic
and flow a bit and open to ideas and participation. And if we do that, that by itself already is the outcome that we desire from the blueprint.
Well, we are also running a poll this morning on Twitter asking you, what is the most effective way to ensure unity in Malaysia? And there were four choices. One, economic prosperity. Two, a common national identity. Three, end of race politics. And four, others. And so far we've had, you know, about 80 votes, and actually 65% of say, end of race politics. The second most voted point was common national identity, and the third was economic prosperity.
Well, you know, so Edin also made the point just now that when we think about diversity, you know, we always have this classic Malay, Chinese, Indian thing, but Malaysia is much deeper than that. So
we are far more diverse.
We are far more diverse than that. And I think this is the challenge we have, right? Most people still think about it skin deep, still think about race being the underlying issue. It probably is one of the big issues, but when we talk about diversity, it's just more than just that.
Yeah. But up next, we've got the Commodities Supercycle with Howie Lee, commodities analyst from OCBC. Bank. That's happening after the 7:30 a.m. news bulletin. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.